Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course you are in tune to a very, very, very powerful, wonderful edition of New Day. This edition, of course, is going to highlight none other than the release of Dr. Matula Shakur. Bear with me, fam. I'm trying to cue something up real quick for you. But also, tonight we are going to have a very candid discussion in regards to Mumia Abu-Jamal. And so there were folks who, of course, were in the courtroom yesterday and are going to give you some insight into what we heard or what was heard yesterday. We're going to also talk with a few folk who were at the rally. And also, of course, after proceedings going over to the church, once gotten to the church, which is where there was a meeting to also discuss what happened yesterday during court. But it was also a discussion regarding, you know, what to do next. Where do we go from here? And so we're going to talk about that with Brother Wasette, who was at the session at the Unitarian Church, which, of course, again, a meeting was held there to focus on the day's activities as well as where do we go from here. While we're waiting for folks to come in for tonight, we're going to also, of course, talk to Brother Lumumba Uncaged, and he, of course, was in the courtroom. He does a lot of our film and taping and also Zoom moderating as well, but he was actually in the courtroom yesterday. And we will probably talk also to Sister Jacqueline, who, again, is the creator of the, an artist of the big, giant Mumia puppet. She, of course, was there as well. And so we are going to possibly hear some words from her to just kind of, you know, get her views as well as other folks' views. Again, we're going to do an open mic so that people can share their views and thoughts both about Dr. Matula Shakur's release and the fact that Mumia's court proceedings has been continued for another to 90 days. And we really would like to know what your thoughts are about that. And so, again, the open mic is going to be a conversation in that regard as well. Hold on one minute. That keeps coming up, y'all. That wasn't me that time, but again, in recognition of the release of Dr. Matula Shakur. Oops, hold up 1 minute. Sorry about that. Trying to cue something up. It's just not letting me do it. That's not what I was trying to do here. So let me try something else real quick. At any rate, you know, it is a wonderful thing that Dr. Matula Shakur is, of course, with us. He is at home with his family. And for those who did not get the release from the Malcolm X grassroots movement, I will locate that for you shortly and read the official release from them. Again, we're going to talk more about Mumia Abu-Jamal, there being 60 to 90 days continuance. But what does it actually mean? Well, we're going to look closer at that. We're going to also hear from Mumia, at least a commentary, because for those that do not know, the United Nations, several countries representing the United Nations did in fact write, or shall I say, sign on to what's known as the amicus brief. An amicus brief is basically translate into a friend's brief, which is, you know, relatively traditional in situations when you are attempting to get additional support and watchings and so forth from other entities that have influence and I dare say power. And so to have, I think, at least 40 countries, I believe, signed on to the amicus brief in support of Mumia getting a new trial, that is major, family. I mean major. So, again, we're going to talk a little bit about that, what that actually means. I know that a lot of people say, oh, you and that don't mean nothing. Da, 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 da. Well, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, in certain kinds of situations, definitely questionable. But you cannot dismiss the impact that it can have in some other things, and definitely in this particular situation. So I did speak with my sister Pam Africa earlier. She would be joining us, but she's having some issues with her voice, her throat in particular, and the doctor has suggested that she, you know, not use it very much, which is why you did not see her. Of course, Roz was there, her husband, but, you know, she's kind of under a doctor's care to really help her voice to heal. And so, again, we are going to hear from her soon, but what she wanted me to convey tonight, which I found so interesting, because this is something that we were raising earlier this week and putting out different posts to get ready for the proceedings for yesterday. And one of the things that Sister Pam wanted me to mention on tonight's program is, where's black folks in Philly? Yep. Now, y'all heard me talk about it. Well, I'm going to tell you. Now, someone else is asking that question. And it's interesting, to say the least. So we're going to have that conversation, too. Where are the black folks in Philly? And no, I'm not talking about the ones who don't know what's going on or don't care what's going on, you know. I'm talking about the folks who supposed to be so down, so revolutionary, so black nationalist oriented, so this, so that, you know, Kwanzaa, da 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 da. Where they at? Why would they not see yesterday as being a very, very important time to show some unity? So we're going to have that conversation tonight, too. Ooh, it's going to be fun. Because I've been saying it for a while. But, you know, folks just think that because of my particular experience that, you know, I had issues with it, which I do. But, you know, it's time to really call a spade a spade. Now, the other thing, that the question that I wanted to raise along with that is, where were the black elected officials? Now, you know, I know the answer, and certainly some other folks know the answer, particularly here in Philly, but it needs to be put on record, just like yesterday needs to be put on record. Groups and organizations, black groups and organizations, were they represented yesterday? Let's see. So we want to also ask, where was the black media? You had the Association of Black Journalists here in Philadelphia, which, by the way, Mumia was a member of. But even if totally, you know, years ago, but you are a reporter, you are a journalist, you do write for newspapers or do TV or do radio or magazine. You didn't see that as being a story? Well, obviously not, because they weren't there. what does that tell us, family? If the UN thought enough to write something, like 42 countries or something like that, you're telling me that black folks in Philly, I mean, it's black folks in Philly could not take a lunch break? Well, obviously not, because they didn't. Anyway, it is what it is, and so here we go. All right, listen, before we get into the dialogue for tonight, we're going to go to our open mic while I get some stuff queued up. And the questions are there for you, family. I'd love to hear your comments. If you came yesterday, if you, you know, were at least following it in some manner, because I think it was live streamed as well, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about Dr. Matula being released? What are your thoughts about the continuation of Mumia's court hearing, case, proceedings for 60, 90 days? Let's go to our live line, and we're going to go with caller at 94. Oops, hold up, 9498, 9498. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment, A New Day.
Good evening, Sister Filet.
Hey, Brother Ray Ray, how are you?
Good evening, Philadelphia. Well, I saw it on live stream,
mm-hmm.
and one of the people that was speaking was talking about saying that where were they at, you know, and you remember they said before you had the people on there that that black judge was going to basically follow protocol. That she wasn't going
right.
to make anything major.
Right.
So everybody basically knew it. But the people were there.
Right.
The people was there. And, you know, you have spoke many times about that town, your
yep.
town where you from on what that's about. And it was good that Matula was released. And I hope they immediately get him with a holistic doctor to start putting massive amounts of nutrients and minerals
you
and vitamins and herbs immediately. You know, it's just sad that Tupac, you know, is not around to see this.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, yes.
You know, I always say they try to match him up with different rappers or whatever you want to call them. But
right.
they couldn't carry his bags. They couldn't carry Tupac's bags because he comes from a revolutionary family. So
that's right.
It's just wishing that he was his life didn't turn out like that, and he, you know, he would have been around to see this. So the fight continues, and what it is what it is. People that's came out because they've been doing it for a long time. So they came out, and I give them credit for that.
Absolutely. And again, you know, we're so thankful that our brothers and sisters from New York, from Newark, because those are the buses that came. You know, and so
they
it just
came
shows
out
you.
And,
no doubt. It just shows you. If folks can come 2 hours, 3 hours, or what have you, because some folks came up from D.C. And other places. You know, here you got folks right around the corner almost.
But you kind of knew they wasn't going to stop through anyway. Yeah, you know your town, and the good people from Philly knows their town. Y'all know your town, and y'all knew they wasn't coming.
You know, it just never ceases to still amaze me.
It's sickening.
It really is, brother. And again, I'm not talking about, you know, the regular everyday person. I mean, that would be nice, but I'm not, my focus is not in this conversation. That's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people that wear red, black, and green, who have a flag.
All over the place.
These are people I'm talking about. Or, you know, comrade this, or, you know, revolutionary greetings, or, you know, all this stuff. Where?
Yeah, for those that didn't come, it was still people that did come. So I'm giving credit to
That's
people
right.
that
no
did
doubt.
Come.
No doubt.
And
no
for
doubt.
Those that didn't come, you know, you never know what might happen somewhere down the line. And I remember, and I'm going to shut up. I remember in the old days of the UAM, and it was this cat that I knew. And he was always talking about them people going over in there with that history stuff and this and that. And he wasn't with it. And, you know, what y'all doing that for? And so this particular time, the police slammed his behind up against the wall.
Wow.
And next thing you know, he was right over there trying to get some support. They slammed him up against the wall right on Fulton in Bedford, across the street from the Slave Theater. And he ran over there trying to get some support. So, you know, you never know what might happen with them people that ain't coming. And next thing you know, they all over the place trying to get some support.
Well,
things do
you
happen.
Know, but, right. That's right, Brother Ray Ray. But, you know, I just want to say this because it's very important. You know, I don't want people to think that, you know, we're just harking on folk, you know, because, you know, we're just trying to be negative or whatever. You know, that's what a lot of times people try to make it seem like, right? That's not it at all. You know, we have people that just be coming into the movement sometimes, particularly younger folks, but older ones too. And it is so important that we point these things out, because if we don't, then they don't get the significance or have a better understanding of certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to make sure that, you know, we make it clear to people that there's some serious contradictions that really have to be looked at, right? And so
mm-hmm.
this is why,
mm-hmm.
or one of the reasons why we point this out, because there's no way that folks should be talking any kind of black stuff if, in fact, you are not, about, you know, you shouldn't just be talking about certain things if you're not going to be representing in something like this. Yesterday was very, very important. Even though, you know, some said, well, you know, they know that she's going to rule a certain kind of way. That's not the point. That's not the point. It was an important proceeding, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And the mere fact that again, we're going to hear from folks that was actually there. She's starting to feel a little something, because the reports that we got, which a few folks will share tonight, the first time she was arrogant. She was a typical Negro.
Mm-hmm.
This time that changed.
It was different.
It was different. From what I was in the courtroom, mm-hmm. but people told me it was different.
Mm-hmm.
See, so don't tell me that, you know, the power of the people and certain other dynamics, don't tell me that cannot help make a difference or do some other things. It can.
Correct.
It can. You know, it can. And that it showed that yesterday. And wait till you hear this other piece of the report. It's very interesting that she said or indicated. And again, I'm going to hold it because I'm going to let the people who were actually in there tell you what that was. Yeah, okay. All right, my brother Ray Ray, thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. All right, family, we're going to go to one more caller and get some views, and then we're going to get ready to share with you some words from Mumia and also from Dr. Mutulu, which is an older interview with him, but the Mumia one just came out on the, well, it came out this month. Okay, I don't know the exact date offhand, but it came out this month. But we're going to go to one more caller on our live line. Caller, you are at 6825. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day. 25. Okay. I guess not. All righty. So we will come back to that at another time, maybe. Okay. Before we get ready to hear Kalumia, let me ask if there is anyone else that has a question or a comment in anything we talked about so far. You can press 1 now if you do. And hold on, I'm trying to cue something up real quick. And again, we're talking about Mumia Abu-Jamal and also Dr. Mutulu Shakur. So let's see. Okay, doesn't look like there's anyone that has another question or comment. I'm going to try one more time with the 6825. 6825, did you have a comment?
That's me.
6825.
That's Jacqueline. That's Jacqueline?
Oh, hey, Sister Jacqueline. I didn't recognize your number. All right.
Okay. I'm listening. I really paid attention to what you said about why certain black journalists weren't there and why certain people weren't there. And the reason I was kind of surprised too, we came all the way from New York. Okay.
Right.
We had to. Right. Yeah, we had to make our journey at 3:30 in the morning. Get the U-Haul. There's a lot of things involved. Bob to get that giant puppet out, and we arrived closer to about 9-ish or so, 9:30, setting up. And by that time, they had dispersed. We saw them, but they had dispersed. And it wasn't as large a group. And that kind of surprised me. But what was very interesting was that wasn't going to stop us. I knew that there was going to be an event. I call it a brainstorming, problem solving at the Unitarian Church. And so myself, there was Brother Shabaka who was there, and several other people who joined in, and some students from University of Pennsylvania were there too. And we basically made our own little march through the streets of Philadelphia, and we really didn't even know where the Unitarian Church was, so we ended up circling City Hall. You know, but
right.
It felt like we got a lot of attention. It felt like we were spreading his spirit, his joy, his hope,
right,
with the giant puppet. And as we walked along, we got people, you know, we were like the Pied Piper, you know, and it was very uplifting. And then what was even interesting was when we got to, you know, I remember just talking to you on the phone and you said, you know, it might be not dismissed, but they were going to push it back.
Right.
You know, so it was like once we got to that Unitarian Church, there was a winding step. I'm like, how are we going to get this down there? And Shabaka, it was so funny. He came down, also says, he's coming in. That's it. That's all he said.
Right.
So it was so fun, you know. And 5 people, they carried the puppet down. They set it up. These people were in a full strategic meeting. You understand, full strategic meeting, and in comes this giant puppet, right? And they sat it up, they clapped, Johanna Fernandez basically had broken people up into groups, and I think one of them was the mural painting group. And Shabaka says, wait a minute, what about the puppet? What about the puppet group, okay? You know, and I laughed, I really laughed, because sometimes you're not on somebody's agenda because maybe it's, they don't see the value of it, but other people see the value of it. And I understand the value of it. I understand the value of a mural also, because a mural is a permanent thing. A puppet is something that comes into a march or into a demonstration, and it's a, what's the word? It's something bigger than life, and it brings back, it brings people together. It brings strength. It's empowering. It's a lot of things. So it was good. It was really good for it to be there. I got to be in the, I guess it was the art group, and I understood that they were going to plan murals in about 3 or 4 cities, including in New York. And I said to the, I think her name is T, I said, well, I have an art studio in Brooklyn, Kiwanis, Brooklyn. We have a lot of paint. You need to, do whatever you need to do. We could all work together. You know, I help you with the murals. You help me build the puppets. You know, we can really have a beautiful collaboration. So I'm hoping that will happen. But the spirit, what was interesting, the spirit was very uplifting when I got there because I didn't know the whole the story. And I think it was Betsy Piet, who's Joe Piet's wife. These are their journalists for the Workers' World. And she explained to me about the 60 to 90 day extension. And I felt relief. I didn't know the whole scenario behind it, and I didn't have time to analyze it as of yet. But what I did know was that because the judge Griffith had come on board and the amicus brief, you know, that played a major part in it. And I knew somebody or somebodies had whispered in her ear, along with the 300 letters that came from the community. Okay, that probably came from the Catholic Diocese, the Archbishop, and a bunch of other people, you know, and we're just telling her, pause, you know, just pause and really understand Mumia's case. You know, don't go with what whoever they're telling you to do. Pause, because she's going to be part of history, okay? You know, even if she's going for a higher office, she is going to be part of history, and it's going to be on her blood, you understand? Her. But what we need to do, because me and you, we had a talk earlier about, is you know, you can talk about things, but you have to have, what's the strategy? What are you going to do to make things happen? I think we need to ramp up the power of letter writing, okay? So each one of us who wrote a letter, and now the new people who are here, each of us have to, we each know at least 20 people in our circle. Okay, at least 20 people we know. We have to have each of them know 20 people and then just keep writing. I'm talking about thousands of letters have to go to this judge. It has to go to the governor. It has to go to the senators. It has to go to the archdiocese. It has to go wherever it's going to put pressure on her. Okay, and once again, as Judge Griffith said, you know, we have to have, I don't know if you use the word mercy, but understand of her position, okay, because she's scared. She's really scared. And I know she's a woman, you know, to get to be a superior judge, you're not, you know, you don't just sort of make this flimsy, you know, decision. You deserve to be there, okay? So all I'm saying is have the courage to do the right thing by Mumia. Okay, have the courage to do it because evidence is all there. She is allowing, I do believe, for them to look through the 30, I think it's 32 boxes. I'm hoping that's part of it. I think that's what Betsy informed me. So there's going to be new discovery, okay, new information. And I'm hoping that Mumia's lawyers, with whatever assistance they need, that they are just extremely diligent and just going over and over and over and over it, you know. I put her in my prayer that she will have this courage to do the right thing. And I believe she will, you know, but as I'm understanding, the power of the people is important, extremely important, and I hope the UN continues to pressure her. You know, I'm hoping the judge can come and speak more, that the judge can get other judges to join in. You understand? you know, that there can be a national and an international debate on this whole situation, and that she must understand that if she is not willing to do the right thing, that we're going to hold her accountable, okay? And that's one thing that Judge Griffin talked about the whole history of the judicial system and how, you know, how Mumia has been treated horribly, horribly, you know. And as you said to me earlier, Mr. Filet, is that this, he's no different than how African-Americans have been treated throughout history in America, KKK, okay? He's no different. So if you're going to sit back and, you know, just let this be a television show, you know, where you're not active, you know, and I'm like, yo, and you live in Philadelphia, I said, this could be you. This could be your son, your daughter, whomever. Okay, you could be in a situation, okay? And in the end, if you're in a situation, or your loved one's in a situation, and you end up in a situation like Mumia, as Senator Street said, you don't want to, because in the end, you could be brought out in a body bag after being in prison, okay? So you have to fight. You have to fight, you have to change things, and you have to be committed. Do I have the answers? I don't have the answers, but I can let my mind try to work with it, work through the problems, not by myself, but with other like-minded people, and know the facts. As you taught me today, Sister Phyllis, you said, learn, know the facts. Who are all the people who control the strings? Know what's going on, and then start to strategize about how this whole thing can change. And that's all I'm saying. You know, write the letters, get into groups, and just keep doing. I mean, because 60 days, 90 days, that'll be gone. There's holidays coming up. You know, whatever it is you celebrate, right? Don't let that get in the way. Every single day you should be getting up with a strategy on how you're going to handle this. And, you know, Mumia is not the only political prisoner or prisoner out there, because there are tons of others just like him there, okay? Let this be a jumping off point, a jumping off point. If you put all your passion into Mumia, then begin to put it into other political prisoners, okay? That's what I have to say. And like you said, you said something really smart to me today. You said, you know, you could be part of different people's groups, and you can also do your own thing. So within your power and what you can do, what do? Some people are writers. So you write. You write letters. You write stories. You write articles. You write books. Whatever you have to do, right, to get the word out. If you're a painter, paint. Not everybody's going to paint a mural, but you can paint, you can illustrate, you can do different things for newspapers and anything that you can think of, social media, do it. If you make puppets, I make giant puppets, and I'm going to continue to make giant puppets and small puppets, and my puppets will be seen, okay? The other thing, don't let anyone shut you down. If someone else's agenda is, okay, we're just going to do murals to represent Mumia. Oh, really? Okay, you could do your mural, okay, and it serves a purpose, but I'm going to still do my puppet. It will go wherever it needs to go to make the message it needs to make. You understand? You will not stop me. My agenda is to get that man free. That's it. That's it.
That's right.
So that's all I have to say right now, you know, unless somebody else comes in and wants to add or anything like that.
Yep. All right, my sister. I'm going to keep your mic open. You can go on mute,
okay.
But if you feel like you want to come back in, your mic will be open and you can just unmute yourself, okay?
Right. Can I add one more thing, sister, real quick?
Sure.
I think that I got a call, I think, this evening from Dr. Alvarez. And I was mentioning to him, he's Mumia's doctor, one of his doctors. Okay, and we're all part of what we call the Mumia Health Committee, and we monitor Mumia's health very detailed and closely. Okay, and this is along with Sister Julia Wright, who is the founder of it, is that we said, you know, this is not a time to sit back. And I said, we need to bring Judge Griffith here. We need to bring him to Philadelphia. We need to bring him to New York. He needs to be talking in front of as many churches as possible. And I'm saying this because if there's any preachers here or any Catholic priests or any rabbis or anyone from a mosque, whatever, he needs to be in as many places as possible and preaching and saying what is happening. And he needs to
Just for point of clarity, let folks know who you're talking about, because we know, but everyone that's listening won't necessarily know who he is.
Okay. So, what do I know? About a week ago, and this was about a week, maybe 2 weeks ago, Sister Julia Wright, who was Richard Wright's daughter, let us know in detail about this group from Arkansas. And these were descendants whose relative had, some of them had been arrested, had been lynched. It just, they had a whole horrible history. And I believe it was 1919, okay? And the descendants are still fighting. And I believe there are about either 15 or 20 of them, and those are children, and we're not even talking about the adults. So the brainstorm was to bring them to New York and have them speak at the event that Sister Fillet had dealing with genocide, okay? Can you hear me? So I hear somebody else on it.
Uh-huh.
It was genocide. Yeah. So what was interesting was that Julia Wright said, they're going to be coming on Thursday. They have nothing to do on Thursday. So I said, hey, why can't they just hang out with me at the puppet studio where the giant Mumia puppet is and, you know, help me with the maintenance and they'll learn about the puppetry. So then, you know, they said, great. They came. They helped with the puppetry. After they helped with the puppetry, we took them to dinner. We got them an Airbnb and beautiful things happened. Studio, and they came back to the puppet studio, and they were on your talk show. I believe it was your talk show. They were on a talk show at about, 8:30, 8:45 that night.
We were on a Zoom show,
right? And they talked, they sang, these were the children, these were the adults. It was just really very beautiful. We finished up working on the puppetry. They had their whole day that Friday to do whatever they wanted to, and we ended up, you know, they came back again, so they had their own time. And that morning, James White, who is the father, okay, of some of them, and who's one of the leaders with the Elaine Legacy Center down there, he helped bring the puppet in to the UN. We set up everything. What was beautiful was that the children had their banner. They talked. They got interviewed. I got interviewed. And one of the young men, there was a picture of him feeding a homeless person right in front of the UN. Okay, I believe that went viral. I believe it went viral also with them in front of the big giant puppet, the Mumia, and I believe Judge Griffith saw it. Okay, and this was one of the reasons he decided to come. I keep saying that he came to New York. He didn't come to New York for him to speak on the press release about the Amiga brief and what was going on with the judge. And I'm not sure if he's a superior judge or what level he is, but he's definitely a high-ranking judge, and he's been a judge for many, many years. And he broke it down. You know, us in the movement, we understand why Mumia needs to be free and released. But as a judge who's equal to Clemens, you understand?
Yes.
He didn't, I'm not going to say he admonished her, but he was explaining what she had missed, okay? And not
right.
that she was of neglect, but if you reach that level, you know. And
right.
like I said, you know, African Americans, any person who's a, quote, minority, you have to work harder in order to get the position, to keep the position, and so on. So
right.
I know she's well-versed in Mumia's case, okay?
Right.
And now what this is forcing her to do is, oh, yeah, I don't know what's in those 32 boxes. I only know about 6 of the boxes. So it might behoove me to, let's have these boxes exhumed from wherever they've been hidden, okay? And, yeah, I want to know what's in that information also before I make a choice. And I think it's wise and smart. And the thing that was interesting was that Griffin, the judge, he said, you know, this puts the whole judicial system on notice in Philadelphia, okay? Because if you're going to go blindly and ignore certain facts about this case, then people have a right to start questioning you, the prior judges, and so on and so forth, okay? They're only talking about, oh, what the FOP did and all this other stuff. But no, now we're going to really turn the light on you.
Okay.
So
we need to do this.
Yeah.
We need to go to the next. We have our next guest waiting, sister. So we're
okay.
going to come back to you. And
okay.
But again, I just wanted you to kind of give clarity about who the judge is that you were referring
okay.
to. Okay. So stay right there. Again, I'm going to keep your mic open,
okay.
but I need to come
okay.
in with the panel for now. And after
okay.
they present, you want to come back in. You're certainly welcome
sure.
to do so. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay, so this is family. What we're going to do now, we have Brother Lumumba Uncaged is ready to come in, and I just got a text from Brother Wyset, who, of course, is at the church, as I mentioned earlier, and he's ready to come in. But before we bring in the panelists, here is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
To members, affiliates, and supporters of the Human Rights Council of the United Nations, Your Excellencies, Ambassadors, Foreign Ministers, and Representatives of 54 African member states, we thank you for your attempts to protect African descended persons in the United States, especially in the wake of the notorious asphyxiation of George Floyd and the immense protests that filled the streets of cities around the world as a direct response thereto. Your attempts gave hope to millions of people who fear becoming the next George Floyd. Your work, supported by the UN Charter, the UN Declaration on Human Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, the Convention Against Torture, the World Conference Against Racism, Racial Discrimination, Xenophobia, and Related Intolerance, the International Decade for People of African Descent of 23rd December, 2013, and other articles of international law gave hope to those living on the brink in U.S. ghettos, in prisons, and the dark, dank holes of death row and beyond. We thank you for your work to breathe life into these documents and make them real tools of social change. When people saw our lives through the tragedy of George Floyd, the same violence that brought him to his end, cities in Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Americas erupted in solidarity and protest. We thank you for your efforts on behalf of human rights. With love, not fear, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Okay, that of course was Mumia Abu-Jamal, and that was in response to letters that were written. Again, this was different from the amicus brief, so if I said that was incorrect about that. This was actually the response. The United Nations recently reiterated their position about human rights violations of black people here in the U.S., referencing the George Floyd situation and others. So again, with MWM taking a frontline position on the We Charge Genocide 21, ours is We Charge Genocide. Always make sure you say 21 for us, because it will differentiate our campaign and project from everyone else's. And we have to do that because it's ancestrally driven. There are 21 areas of crimes against humanity that we have cited, at least 21. And so each area has a research, a task force, and other things. So when the time comes, we will be presenting on each specific area. So COINTELPRO, political prisoners, 13th Amendment, solitary confinement, those are specific areas that is connected to the 21, actually it's 21 plus points. But again, this is our We Charge Genocide 21 project. And again, you're here, gentrification, homelessness, black veterans, black farmers. This is a part of our campaign, MWMs. So it's very different from others. So, of course, police and governmental terrorism is always there because our research and continuation of work and mission, of course, is that of the great Paul Robeson, William Patterson. We started ours 5 years ago consistently and was even meeting at the Paul Robeson House here in Philadelphia to consolidate our effort and making certain that we were in sync. We did the same thing with other areas of work, of research. So Mumia is relating to some of the documents that we have also began to research, present, and get prepared to further. So that is what that was in reference to, him responding or thanking the United Nations. And this was before they, you know, made the statement or whatever in connection to the amicus brief, you see. So these things are just very, very important. One thing leads to another and another and another, and it's all applicable and it's all encompassing. So listen, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to bring in Brother Lumumba Uncaged, who is going to tell us about what he saw and his thoughts about it yesterday in attending the court proceedings. And then we're going to bring in Brother Watts. Greetings, Brother Lumumba. How are you this evening?
Greetings, greetings. All is well. How you doing? How's the listening audience?
Oh, well, you know, we doing what we do, as you can hear.
Yes, yes, indeed. Give thanks, much appreciated.
So tell us about what happened yesterday. You were there. You were an eyewitness. You saw it. You heard it. Give us your views, you know, your thoughts, your report.
Surely, surely. So, you know, I was glad that, you know, I could be in attendance and bear witness. And there was a packed courtroom, you know, in support. And it was an interesting energy in the room, though. And, you know, the attitude or the energy from the judge was interesting too. So the main points that were touched on by the defense, and this is Judge Lucretia Clemens, just to set the record straight on that. And so we were in courtroom 802. And things got underway. The main arguments were that dealing with the need for an appeal due to the fact that there was apparent witness tampering as far as there being evidence that was presented or submitted from the six boxes that were discovered, and, you know, the letters inside it stated that one, Miss White was there was a statement saying that, you know, she was given favor, you know, based on the fact that she had several open cases that were at that time overlooked and no longer pursued when she was giving her testimony. And also, there was inconsistency with the gentleman witness. And he, in the letter, it stated that, you know, to the prosecutor at the time, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, when am I going to get my money, you know, that you owe me? And so those were the main, you know, points that were made as far as, you know, there being, you know, witness tampering. And then the other point that was made was that there was, you know, letters indicating that, you know, signed, initialed off by, you know, members of the prosecution, where they were earmarking the race specifically of black male jurors, and that based on that, a large number, I believe 70% was excluded from the jury listing. It was 10 basically vetoes that could be issued, and they were all used on, you know, these black male possible jurors, and which, of course, would sway the jury minus, you know, those individuals in a specific way. So that was the basic arguments, the two main arguments from the defense of our brother Mumia. And the prosecution basically, you know, quoted, you know, the previously stated testimonies and said, you know, limited that, you know, they were under oath or under sworn oath. And, you know, these are the written testimonies. And they argue that the evidence was superficial, that the gentleman, you know, was owed a stipend based on how the program of you know, being a witness in a major case, you know, that those are things that are already allocated. And so they were arguing that factor, and there was nothing specific, you know, that would indicate that he was being bribed specifically. And then they were also claiming that same thing with Ms. White, and, you know, saying that she was just allotted, you know, the basic privileges that a witness would be allotted, which was like housing and an allowance for her male friend to be able to pay cash bail because he felt as though his life might have been threatened. And then as far as the juror accusation, they, you know, they were saying that it's common practice to note, you know, the race of jurors, you know, based on just the gathering of, you know, basic information as far as that pool and that collective as far as jurors are concerned. So that's basic information that's, you know, taken regardless. That was basically their argument. But I guess more importantly would be that it's up to the defense to provide the burden of proof that these accusations are indeed factual, you know, and they have the evidence to back it up. So, you know, they were basically saying that that's not the case. So just based on that grounds alone, minus, you know, the other arguments, that, you know, it should be dismissed. So the judge, Judge Clemens, she seemed, you know, just very agitated, you know, just she was saying she wanted to get the case over with. She wanted this to be the last time. And, you know, was there any other, additional evidence that the defense or the prosecution, you know, wanted to present in finalizing this case? And, you know, she made mention of, you know, an additional 30 boxes that had, you know, been discovered as well with the six. And so the judge asked both the prosecution and the defense, had any of them look through those boxes for any additional evidence that might be pertaining to this case. And the prosecution, of course, said they weren't looking, you know, no, they had not, because it's not in the interest of them to be looking. The evidence that they had was sufficient enough, and that's what they were standing on. And so, you know, they were asking the defense, and they, you know, had not at that point, because, you know, you have to sanction for them, you know, so they can be reviewed, and they never did that, you know, up until that point. And so, you know, the judge, she just seemed very just agitated, and, you know, like she wanted to just get it over with. I mean, kind of just very dismissive of the fact of even guilt or innocence. It was just merely the bureaucracy of, you know, the proceedings that she was mainly concerned about. So, you know, that was my take. Then the conclusion of that was it was a 60 to 90 day period until she made her final decision, and she had advised that, you know, the defense look in the additional 30 boxes before that time. So looking at that, I was just, you know, kind of disappointed in the defense. And it's just seeming like, as I look back, you know, the same history of, you know, representation or lack thereof from his defense, and, you know, just how the entire case has been, you know, as they say, a kangaroo court, and, you know, kind of just been liquidated from the beginning, you know, with dealing with the injustice system.
Okay. All right, my brother. So listen, you stay right there. I'm going to come back to you in a few moments. A family that, again, was one of our reports. Uh-oh. Hold on. I hope I'm...
Greetings. 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 We have some line trouble. Greetings. Greeting. Hello? Okay, we have